This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. At the end of last year, a 500-page report from the Institute of Medicine concluded that the $10 billion spent each year pitching food and drinks to kids is a critical factor in the alarming rise in obesity, type 2 diabetes, and other dietary-related health problems plaguing America's youth. This got me wondering about my own 5-year-old, so we took a field trip to the supermarket. Please note that while Ida is brilliant and adorable, she can't read. Oddly, that proved to be no handicap in the cereal aisle.
Trix.
Trix, right. And what's this one?
Marshmallow cereal.
Yeah, Lucky Charms. And let's see, what else? What else do you...
Honey.
Golden
butter.
Golden Grahams, yeah.
Yeah, and there's also honey butter Cheerios.
Well, how do you know about all these?
I saw them on TV. Cocoa Puffs.
From this highly scientific study, it appears that advertisements are doing the tricks. I mean, trick. But the Federal Trade Commission issued its own report earlier this month. The conclusion, self-regulation is enough to keep the advertisers in line, therefore keeping our increasingly overweight children healthy. Food companies fearing a crackdown breathed a sigh of relief, while health advocates felt the report did not go far enough. Michelle Simon is the director of the Center for Informed Food Choices, and she joins us now. Michelle, welcome to OTM.
Thanks for having me.
If toy makers and publishers are allowed to use Super Mario Brothers and SpongeBob SquarePants as licensed characters to sell their products, why shouldn't the food industry be permitted to use the same tactics to sell their stuff?
It's important to understand that young children don't even have the cognitive ability to conceptualize what marketing is. So they see SpongeBob in the program. A few seconds later, they see SpongeBob in a commercial. They have no idea that there's even a difference. Why do kids ask for, you know, macaroni and cheese? Because it's the box is splashed with SpongeBob. And that's the kind of exploitation that people are saying should stop.
But we're faced with the problem that these are legal products and we have a First Amendment. Are advertisers not permitted within the boundaries of truth to say more or less what they please to promote their products to kids or anybody else?
Just because the product is legal does not make the marketing around it legal. I really don't think our founding fathers could have anticipated that the First Amendment would be used to protect the likes of Kraft and Kellogg and PepsiCo to target young children.
Well, I'm not the world's best parent. I have certain minor flaws. Yeah, I'll give you something to cry about, you know, that sort of thing. But I got to tell you, my kids are exposed to quite a bit of commercial television and commercial messages. And I've discovered that no is an extremely effective answer to any request for junk food. And they kind of learned to expect a no before they even ask the question.
Obviously, parents have to set limits, et cetera. But what role does industry and the government have to play as well in helping parents do as good a job as they can? And why are food companies undermining the ability to do a good job at every opportunity? You walk through the supermarket aisles, and it's no accident that all of the foods that are unhealthy for kids, the sugary cereals, the fruit rolls, the highly processed, high sugar, high fat items are placed at a child's eye level, 2 to 3 feet high, for kids to grab and yell to mommy, please buy me this. I mean, industry has a term for this. It's called the nag factor. A lot of marketing is going into the internet, and we've had to invent a new word, which is advergaming, which is a technique that companies use to embed advertising into internet games. So while companies like to point to parents, what they're doing is going behind parents' back, targeting children directly, and undermining parents' ability to be responsible.
Now, just by coincidence, last week I happened to spend some time with the head of marketing for McDonald's worldwide and with a big shot in Kraft's organization. And it was very clear to me that they have gotten the message, that they know that the public health crisis with childhood obesity and so forth has put a kind of pressure on them that they have never faced before. Have you seen anything more than a token recognition of what's happening, or is self-regulation beginning to actually work?
The food companies are on the defense. There's no question about that. Companies like McDonald's, Kraft, Coca-Cola have been responding. However, the way they've chosen to respond is basically window dressing. Kraft came out with this big announcement in January of 2005 saying they were changing their marketing practices towards children. How were they doing that? Were they going to stop marketing to kids? No. They were just going to shift some of their marketing dollars from some products into other products. Products like half the sugar Fruity Pebbles cereal. Now, most nutritionists will tell you that there's not much difference between regular sugared Pebbles cereal and half the sugar Fruity Pebbles cereal, especially when they make up for the sweetness with Splenda, an artificial sweetener, and the number of calories is the same. These companies understand that public relations is the name of the game, and so they're responding in a number of ways to make us all think that everything's fine, they're doing a good job, but the truth is it's just a bunch of PR.
Michelle, thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Michelle Simon is the director of the Center for Informed Food Choices. She teaches health policy at the University of California, Hastings College of the Law.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.